Today, a deep dive on Central Coast property. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World, that is Post, covering finance and property news. Well, quite often with my one-to-one conversations, I get down deep and dirty into a particular postcode. And recently I had the opportunity to do that with postcode 2251, which is there in the middle of the Central Coast. So today I thought I'd share some of my analysis because I found this a really interesting example of an area which is quite diverse, but which also has significant trends that are different from many others across New South Wales. Before I start, let me remind you that we do this via our core market model. This is our main research tool where we incorporate information from various sources, including our household surveys. And this allows us to get a really good view of what's going on down on the ground. Of course, granularity is important, particularly now. I'd also make the point that we can think about how mortgage stress and price trajectory and history and the buying and selling intention and migration and the economic data can all feed in and also form a view of where prices may go using scenarios. And this is not prediction, but it is sensitivity to what's going on. With regard to 2251, you can see here on the map that it covers areas from Arriga Beach through to Kapapagana and right the way through to Yatalunga, Saratoga and Davidson near Woi Woi. And right in the middle is Kinkumba, which is actually quite an interesting area insofar that Kinkumba is an area that I think reflects quite interestingly a compromise between the coastal buzz and the quieter inland living. If you think about it more broadly, it covers a range of lifestyles from the ocean through to Brisbane water. And it's characterised by steep coastal terrain, bushland interfaces, and a mixture of beachside villages and quiet waterfront communities. There's limited commercial centres and quite strong reliance on nearby hubs like Gosford or Erina for higher order services. And just to give you a bit of flavour, here are a few shots in and around the middle of the area. So you've got places like Coles and Liquorland, of course, but you've also got quite a lot of areas that are away from those major roads, quiet streets, a lot of relatively older properties on quite large blocks, mostly a single story, and some in need probably of some renovation, others perhaps more recently renovated. But it's quite quiet. And of course, there is quite a lot of redevelopment going on at the moment, but not a lot of subdivision. We'll talk about the planning a little later. And there are other local services in the area, but frankly, not as much as you might actually expect to see for such a large community. Just before I go on, I'll tell you a bit about the history because it's quite interesting. The first people were here, of course, a long time ago, and there was a long-standing cultural connections with coastal and estuarine landscapes, including fishing, seasonal movement, and spiritual sites along the headlands and waterways. The early European activity really had a significant impact for timber getting and small-scale rural activity, with tracks and jetties supporting movements of logs and supplies to Sydney. And then later on, there was a significant subdivisions and village formed with Kapapagana, originally a timber area, subdivided for residential use in the mid-1950s, gazetted in 1969. And the name there was borrowed from Brazil to mark an aspirational coastal lifestyle. The suburb remained largely a weekend and holiday destination until improved links to Sydney late in the 20th century shifted it towards more permanent residency and certain politicians, of course. You've got Davidson there, develops a small waterfront settlement on Brisbane water with boat building, fishing and modest housing. and the stock gradually consolidating into a tightly held residential suburb, its growth has been incremental rather than master planned, preserving a low-scale village character. Overall, 2251 has actually resisted large-scale commercial or high-rise development and has retained a village identity and strong emphasis on nature, surf culture and quiet waterfront living. Looking at the demographics, quite interesting, it's relatively affluent and advantaged. For example, Copacabana records household incomes around the 81st percentile nationally, and there is both advantage and low disadvantage scores indicating a relatively affluent and well-educated resident base. Owner occupation dominates across this area. In Copacabana, 77% of dwellings are either owned outright or with a mortgage, with renters under a quarter of households. Davidson similarly shows an owner-dominant profile with renters around 40% of stock. And if you look at the household structure and age, mostly family-orientated, around 72% with children, a median age in the early 40s, reflecting a mix of professional families and active retirees, and significantly population stability. The population is around 2,800 in Copacabana, and it's only grown modestly over the past decade, signalling an established community with limited expansion capacity due to geography and, very importantly, the zoning constraints. We'll come back to this because these zoning constraints are very different from other parts up in the Tweed, for example. In terms of the dwellings, 94 to 95% of dwellings are separate houses. And if you look at it also in terms of usage, a lot of holiday homes, about 28%, on the coast sit vacant at any given time, highlighting the substantial holiday home and investment presence. Davidson, by contrast, is more consistently occupied year-round with a low vacancy, just about 0.5%. And again, house-dominated stock, units about 8%. And in terms of property price trends, if you look at Copacabana, median house prices in the premium coastal tier are somewhere between $1.7 and $1.9 million. Between $1.7 and $1.9 million in recent estimates, with cumulative five-year growth around 48%, which is driven by strong lifestyle demand from Sydney sea changes and constrained land supply. Davidson, on the other side, has typical values around $1.4 million, with year-on-year growth about 5 to 6%, and it's supported by low stock on market and limited new supply. It's also worth highlighting, I think, the gross rental yields are pretty low as well, 1.6 to 2.3%. Which is reflecting high capital values relative to rents, and the positions are really around capital growth and lifestyle rather than cash flow from an investment perspective. Now, it's worth highlighting, I think, that across this area, the stocks are relatively low on market and there are relatively short inventory periods, perhaps around 3 months in Davidson, for example, showing constrained supply and firm buyer competition. And despite some market fluctuations, demand from higher income households and limited development land means that the long-term value is there and is retained. So even when short-term cycles, often prices move a little less. But as we will see, property price growth has slowed recently. And talking about the planning and zoning, it's worth looking at that because the 2251 area sits under the Central Coast Local Environment Plan, the LEP. And the Development Control Plan, the DCP. And it's generally targeted at maintaining low-rise, low-density residential zoning along the coast and foreshore, with environmental overlays for bushfire, coastal erosion and biodiversity. And that constrains large-scale redevelopment and favours incremental refill and renovation rather than greenfield expansion. And of course, we've also got national park and environmental buffers as well, which means that if you look at Copacabana, around 50 to 60 development applications have been made in the past year, but it's mostly for alterations, additions, knockdown rebuilds, and small-scale new dwellings, rather than major subdivisions or multi-story projects. And if you look in Davidson, very low vacancy rates and stock on market shows that new supply is largely limited to occasional lot redevelopments, waterfront upgrades, and replacement housing rather than broad acre subdivisions. And again, it's worth highlighting that most of the properties here are detached, four-bedroom plus houses and three-bedroom homes are quite common. And from an architectural point of view, steep hillsides and view-driven designs have produced a mix of older beach shacks, brick houses from the 1970s to 90s, and contemporary architect design houses with decks, large glazing and coastal materials. So it's quite varied. It's also worth highlighting that there is a very high risk in some areas, particularly for bushfire attack, coastal erosion risks, and some specific issues there with regard to fire-resistant materials and setbacks and geotech assessments, which do influence both the cost and form of new builds. So in summary, you can say 2251 is best understood as a mature, high-amenity coastal and waterfront cluster with limited capacity of large-scale growth due to geography, environmental constraints, and protective zoning. Strong long-term capital prospects could be anchored in lifestyle appeal and scarcity of development land, but the planning emphasis on resilience, focusing on bushfire, coastal hazard, and infrastructure support rather than densification means that, in fact, the number of properties is probably not going to grow anything like as much. If you go further up the coast, up towards the Tweeds there, massive growth is planned in the next 10 to 20 years. In this area, not so much. And here's just an example of one area, just to highlight the way that the zoning works. And you can see that it is pretty well broken down and the various residential zones are tightly controlled. And you can also see that the risk of flooding in some areas is actually quite significant. So it makes sense, if you look at a particular property in the area, to really understand the flooding risks, especially close to the water and along creeks. Now, here are some trends relating to properties over the last 10 years. And we'll start with King Cumber. And you can see back in June 2017, the average house price was around $675,000. A decade later, it's moved up to $1.167 million. But significantly, the significant growth there was in 2021, and there was a drop in 2023 and small rises in the last two or three years, sub 10% over the last year. If we look at Avoca Beach, 932,000 in June 2017, in June 2026, 1.783. And it's interesting that over the last year, there's been almost no growth in this particular part of 2251. Bensville, average price a decade ago was $871,000 for a house, now $1.564 million in June 2026. But again, over the last couple of years, in June 2025 and June 2026, almost no growth at all. And Copacabana saw significant growth in June 2017. It was $877,000, now it's $1.646 million. As of June 2026, but again, falls this last year and very low levels of growth in June 2024-25, as well as the fall in 2026. Again, it was June 2021 after COVID that created a lot of the momentum. People wanted to get out of Sydney and go somewhere quiet and hopefully safer. I think the property trends are very telling, as we'll see shortly. In Daviston, again, falls over the last year or so, but back in June 2017, the average price for a house was $690,000, now $1.203 million in June 2026. And again, the biggest spike, up more than 50% in June 2021, has not been replicated since. If we go to Greenpoint, in June 2017, was $778,000 in June 2026, $1.339 million. And some smaller rises over the last couple of years, but again, it was June 2021 that saw the massive spike, up more than 35%. In King Cumber South, similar trends, $886,000 in June 2017, $1.6 million in June 2026, and falls in June 2023, June 2024, and in the year to June 25 and 26, small rises. McMaster's Beach had falls over the last 3 years. In June 2017, $901,000 for a property, mostly houses, of course. In June 2026, 1.739 million. And it's worth again highlighting that it was June 2021 that saw rises of more than 40%. 22 and 23 followed, but since then prices have been falling. If we go to Saratoga, in June 2017, $732,000. In June 2026, 1.273 million. Very small rises in the last couple of years, and again a big spike up in June 2021. And in Yatalonga, similar trend. Prices back in June 2017, $704,000. In June 2026, 1.258 million. And very small rises over the last couple of years. The biggest spike again, more than 30% in June 2021. Briefly on the scenarios. If you've been following the shows here, you'll understand the way I do this. These are just indicators. The best case, the base case, and the worst case shows how prices could move. And here is the latest analysis for this particular postcode, which shows there are around 13,600 households, that 45% are borrowing, 37% are owning outright, and only 70% are renting. There is quite a lot of mortgage stress because the average mortgage is quite high, as we'll see in a second. 49% of those borrowing have cash flow pressures. Rental stress is also high for those who are renting in the area. And around 45% of households are in financial stress. It's mostly houses, 82% of houses in this area. The vacancy rate at 12% is quite high. That's about the part-time use of property, Airbnb and holiday homes. Gross investment yield is around 3.4%, but the net investment yield is underwater. So there is very little cash flow positive here from an investment perspective. The ATO reported an average taxable income of $102,000 in the year 23-24, and the household census said $89,000 back in 2021. That gives us a supposed monthly income around $5,600, with 45% going on the mortgage at $2,600 a month, and 39.4% or $2,243 a month going on the rent. And looking at the scenarios ahead, I can't see property price growth across this postcode on average over the next 3 years. Even in the best case scenario, small falls, maybe down 5% over 3 years. But in the base case, down 19%. In the worst case, down 38% in units following on. Also highlight the fact that the default rate at 4.3% is somewhat higher than some other areas, but it's relatively small numbers of people who are likely to default on their mortgage payments, 267. That's quite small, but still 4.3% is higher than some other areas, which highlights again the high levels of stress in the area. Another way to look at it, this is the SQM data just showing the listings, and you can see there that the number of listings over 60 days up to 90 days, 180 days is rising. There are still new properties coming on and they get swept up quite quickly, but there is quite a lot of property that is hanging around. And also it's worth looking at units versus houses, predominantly houses available at the moment. And if we look at what's available at the moment, there's about 100 properties for sale across this postcode, quite a few on the coast, quite a few over on Brisbane waters, and a smaller count in that intermediate area. And here's just a quick snapshot, which shows you first, it's quite wide ranging, from $270,000 at Greenpoint up to 1.6 or 1.7 million at Saratoga. But also highlight the fact that many prices are not disclosed on the public portals. You've got to actually contact the agent. We're seeing this more and more, and that to me is a sign potentially of a weaker market than many people would believe to be the case at the moment. Prices are definitely on the slide. If you want definitive information about prices in the area, of course, the Valuer General New South Wales portal is available. Here's a quick query that I did on Kincumber, and it shows you what's available in terms of the information. So you can see for a particular property address, the property area, if it's not a unit, the sale date, and the definitive purchase price. This purchase price information is much more definitive than what's available on the property portals. So, in summary, this is an area where, because of planning constraints, the supply of new properties is quite limited. We are seeing more property hanging around. That's partly because vendors are still wanting to meet a price that probably the market can't meet. Prospective buyers are being much more cautious and careful and are certainly bidding prices down. But there are still some interests from more affluent people who are interested in acquiring a place on the beach or up the hill with a view. And that does put a floor on some prices, particularly on the coastal strip. But it is quite different from some other areas. And I would highlight again the predominance of mortgage stress. There are quite a few households here who are under financial pressure because of the cost of living and because of the big mortgages and because of high inflation. And this would suggest to me that we could see more properties coming on in the months ahead. I expect to see listings rise, but I also expect to see more properties hanging around because the vendors are not prepared to meet the market. So in conclusion, 2-5-1 is a fascinating area to examine. It's quite diverse, but it does, I think, highlight also that the impact of recent interest rate rises and the cost of living and other pressures are having a very significant impact on price trajectory. And certainly that 2021 event, which was, of course, the COVID-triggered event, was a one-off. And therefore, those claiming massive price rises in this particular area over the past decade, it's being masked by that one big year. Since then, in some areas, prices are falling and will probably continue to fall. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.